I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. In this hour, a look at Baltimore's Liquor Board. Governor Larry Hogan recently appointed two new members to the board. Already some Baltimoreans are expressing concerns. Last week, the new board chairman lifted the 180-day suspension of a controversial lounge on the north side of the city, upsetting neighbors and a member of the city council. The same chairman appointed a committee heavy with pro-liquor interests to review the board's rules. Rebecca Lundberg-Witt is a liquor board watchdog, observing and commenting on the board's actions for the Community Law Center's Booze News. She joins us this hour to talk about the liquor board's recent history of strict enforcement and what she sees ahead as Governor Hogan's appointments take control. That's Midday after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. The second hour of our show today, if you've been worried about the economy, or at least, you know, if you think about it a lot, you should definitely stay tuned for the second hour of the show today. Silicon Valley entrepreneur Martin Ford. Martin Ford is a futurist. He thinks about the future a lot, as do a lot of people in Silicon Valley. Anyway, he sounds an alarm without being an alarmist in a new book about robotics called The Rise of the Robots. He has a prediction that automation will not only do away with low-skilled factory jobs, but with the jobs of knowledge workers who thought they were safe from obsolescence. Martin Ford joining us in the second hour of our show today to talk about robotics, artificial intelligence, and the future. A note about tomorrow's show, approaching the one-year anniversary of the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, University of Maryland law professor Michael Pinard will be joining us tomorrow to look at similarities between Ferguson and Freddie Gray's Baltimore. And then at 1, Sherry Parks is back with us, our American culture commentator, looking at American history going up on YouTube with Associated Press and Movie Tone newsreels, millions and millions of minutes of newsreels from the old days now available to us on YouTube and its meaning for our culture. And we'll also be talking about the Republican presidential debate, which is Thursday night. So a little bit of talk about that tomorrow in the walk-up to it. In this hour of the show, our first hour today, we're going to talk about the Baltimore City Liquor Board. The Liquor Board has been working to fix its reputation here in Baltimore since 2013, when a scathing audit revealed lax enforcement and sloppy record keeping. And at one point, the Sun reported that two workers who were expected to conduct some 800 inspections each year of liquor establishments had actually only completed 41 such inspections in a year. The leadership of the Liquor Board has changed three times in the last, 3 years or so. And we're going to talk about that today. Joining me in Studio A is Rebecca Lundberg-Witt. Becky Witt is a staff attorney with the Community Law Center. The Community Law Center is a nonprofit firm that provides legal services to communities and nonprofits. And for the past 2 years, Becky Witt has written for the Community Law Center's Booze News blog, chronicling what happens at each and every meeting of the Baltimore City Liquor Board. And she's also represented some community organizations in hearings before the board. So, Becky, first of all, I want to welcome you to the show, and thank you for letting me call you Becky.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's Rebecca Lundberg-Witt. How did you fall into this trap? Oh, I'm sorry. How did you fall into this assignment? I don't know if you fell into it or you went looking for it.
I volunteered.
To be a watchdog?
I did, yes. Yeah. So there was another attorney at Community Law Center who was doing this for kind of a summer project to follow up on the 2013 legislative audit to see what the board would do to improve. We hoped, anyway, that it would improve how it ran the agency after the audit. And so she went to every hearing of the liquor board and took notes. And so she was leaving at the end of that summer, so I just kind of almost on a whim volunteered to take it over from her and have been doing it for 2 years since then.
I don't want to assume that everyone understands what the liquor board does, so let's just do that quickly. What's within the legal purview of the liquor board, and why is the liquor board of Baltimore City appointed by the governor of Maryland? Why don't you answer that question first?
Sure. So the Liquor Board, a lot of people get confused about this, which makes sense. The Liquor Board is actually a state agency. Each county in Maryland has its own Liquor Board, and because Baltimore City is an independent city, doesn't belong to any other county, we have our own Liquor Board here in Baltimore City. So alcohol regulation is all under state law. And the Liquor Board exists to protect that public health, safety, and welfare, and they do that by regulating every single business that's allowed to sell alcohol in Baltimore City.
Enforcing the law, the liquor laws of the state.
Yes.
And the governor gets to appoint three members of the board when he wants to, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
They serve at the pleasure of the governor. So Governor O'Malley replaced two commissioners after the audit because of the audit. And then Governor Hogan appointed two new ones when he came to power.
Yes. And that's a recent development. Attorney Benjamin Neal was appointed by Governor Hogan and he's the chairman of the board now. And businessman Douglas Trotter, also now on the City Liquor Board, appointed by Governor Hogan. And there's one more member of the board, Harvey Jones. Now, Harvey Jones has served under Governor O'Malley, right?
Yes. So Harvey Jones has been there since 2007. Right now, he's transitioning to become the alternate member, and they still need to appoint one more full commissioner. So right now, he's the alternate commissioner, but he's filling in because they haven't filled that third place yet.
Okay. A little bit more background here for our listeners while we're talking about this today. It's interesting to see what's happening with the Liquor Board in Baltimore City, especially the last couple of years. The chairman was Tom Ward, a former circuit court judge who Governor O'Malley appointed to chair the Liquor Board after this audit came out. And if you want to provide a little more detail about what that audit said and what Tom Ward did when he took over.
Sure. So the audit was actually something that Community Law Center was involved in helping to push into state law. So now they have to have an audit every 3 years. So we'll have a new audit actually coming out this fall. It basically showed that there's a complete lack of policies and procedures from licensing to inspections to oversight of the inspector. Some of the inspectors had been there for 20 years and had never had a performance review, which makes sense when you look at the data in the audit because, like you said, some of the inspectors are doing hardly any inspections. Mm-hmm. The inspectors' reports were not ending up in the files. The files were a mess.
What does an inspector do, by the way? I mean, we assume we know. They're looking for minors getting served in bars. That's one obvious thing.
They're supposed to be. Well, that's kind of part of the problem is that a lot of the things that are on the inspector's reports that they're supposed to check for are things like clean bathrooms and making sure that the alcohol is stored at least 2 inches off the ground, stuff that no one ever has really complained to me about from the community side. These are not really important issues to communities. I mean, you know, we hope that you have a clean bathroom, but people are really more interested in stuff like trash, over-serving is a really big one. And just the stuff that affects communities, public urination, vomiting, noise, that kind of stuff, which all happens in the evening. So the inspectors were, before Tom Ward took over, the inspectors were mostly working during the day when the bars were not operating. And I don't know if you saw, The Sun had an article in The Brew also.
The editorial this week. Yesterday's editorial, is that what you mean?
No, it was, well, that one too, but the one from the inspectors all sent a letter to Tom Ward saying we shouldn't have to work at night.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah. They were upset because their hours were changed, because that's right. When all the problems really happen.
Right. And community organizations, neighbors of bars, frequently complain about behavior from bars spilling into the streets, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so during the Tom Ward era, which wasn't that long, really, just a couple of years.
It was 1 year, yeah.
Yeah, only 1 year.
It was just 1 year.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Dana Moore was also a member of the board at that time.
Yes.
Attorney Dana Peterson Moore, and a little disclosure, Dana Peterson Moore is a friend of mine. She's married to a friend of mine. So during that time, they really got strict. Under Tom Ward.
They did. Much stricter than the previous administration. They were much more community-oriented. They gave much stiffer punishments. I think that they were still a little bit uneven and inconsistent in the punishments, but they were much more community-friendly and much harsher in the punishments, for
much
sure.
Much harsher, yes. Mm-hmm. Some of the attorneys for various liquor establishments, bars, restaurants complained that the board was overly harsh.
Yeah,
It wasn't what they were used to.
It was not at all what they were used to. They were very much used to a slap on the wrist and maybe a, you know, $250 fine. And the fines were significant under the Ward administration.
Let's talk about the stadium lounge. Okay. This takes us to North Baltimore and a decision that was made this week involving the stadium lounge in Waverly on Greenmount Avenue. It's been there for a long time. The previous board, under the chairmanship of Tom Ward, had imposed a 180-day suspension of the stadium lounge. Becky Witt will explain why. And then the new chairman, who just took over, Benjamin Neal, decided to stop that suspension at 71 days. But first of all, why was this lounge suspended? What were the problems there?
Okay, so on May 14th, there was a hearing, and there were three charges.
May 14th this year?
It was this year, right. Yeah. There were three charges. They all had to do with illegal gambling. So this place, it's a tavern. They have packaged goods, and they also have a so-called tavern area in the back. Often times those tavern areas are not accessible to the public. But so there was a video poker machine. They were illegally paying out customers for that machine. And so then the vice unit of the Baltimore City Police had gotten a tip from community members that this was happening. They did an investigation. They got a warrant. They came to execute the warrant. And the licensee tried to take a bunch of money and hide it in his car when the police were, searching under their warrant. So he admitted to all the violations the licensee did. And then the community came in and complained about lots of other issues that were not necessarily directly related to gambling, but were also just related to the patrons there spilling out into the street. A lot of over-serving, people drinking on the sidewalk right in front, just a lot of nuisance issues, trash everywhere. There were dozens of people at that hearing who had taken time off work to come down and say, this place is really a problem for us. We're trying to improve Greenmount Avenue. So they did get a pretty harsh suspension. Also, I think sometimes people kind of laugh off illegal gambling like it's not a big deal. But there was a report that Joan Jacobson did for the Able Foundation a few years ago that showed that there's a lot of ties to organized crime from those illegal poker machines. So it's kind of part of a much bigger issue. So anyway, they got the 6-month suspension, $9,000 fine as well, which was appealed to the circuit court.
Now, let me ask you something. I know you haven't been a watchdog of the liquor board that long, but 6-month suspension, how does that compare to other penalties imposed by the board?
I think that might have been the longest one that I had seen. So I've been doing it 2 years. I don't think I've seen another 6-month suspension that I can think of. The next longest one was for Craig's, I think, on York Road, so kind of the same street, for 4 months, I believe.
Okay. And a $9,000 fine.
Yeah. So that's $3,000 for each of the violations. So that's the maximum amount they're allowed to charge for each one.
Now, has the board revoked licenses? Have you seen them actually revoke a liquor license?
The last time I've seen them revoke a liquor license was under the Fogelman administration.
That's before Tom Ward.
That's before Tom Ward, yeah. Okay. So they declined to renew some licenses, which has the same effect. So each year, every license is up for renewal. And the board can choose to either renew it for another year or not, depending on whether there's been a protest. And so they've declined to renew. So that kind of has the same effect because they don't end up with a license.
Becky,
anymore.
Do you know what happens when the board, if I use they, I'm referring to the board, does not renew a license? What happens to that license?
It's extinguished.
It's done?
Yeah,
it's gone?
Mm-hmm. So they did that for maybe four licenses this past protest of renewal time spring.
Because, we've been told that the city has worked on this, folks who have worked on the rezoning of Baltimore City, folks over at Johns Hopkins, Bloomberg School of Public Health have all looked at this and noted how many liquor licenses there are in Baltimore City compared to the population of Baltimore City. We have as many liquor licenses now as we did, just about as many as we did, like, when the city had 200,000 or 250,000 more people.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so Stadium Lounge starts serving its suspension. It's closed, and then a new chairman takes over, Benjamin Neal, who's a Baltimore attorney. And from what I'm reading here in The Sun and in the Baltimore Brew, Brew had this first, he just decided to stop the suspension at 71 days. And there was no hearing or notice about that.
Right. So there was an appeal to the circuit court. And so basically when they've appealed to the circuit court, now the party on either side is the liquor board and the licensee. So basically they settled that lawsuit by saying that the board agreed that they had served enough of their suspension. So it's basically the same as any kind of other settlement that you might have for a lawsuit that's in court. So technically, it is probably not illegal what happened, that the new chairman decided to settle this appeal, although it's kind of alarming that it seems like he did it completely on his own and not with the other two commissioners who are also on the board with him. But I guess the issue for the community, and I don't want to speak for them because I don't represent them and I don't live in that neighborhood, but from what it seems like, the community found it disrespectful that this new chairman, who did not hear any of the testimony that day in May, would just completely overturn a suspension that was put in place by people who did hear that testimony.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know what he was thinking other than settling this litigation in circuit court.
Right. I mean,
which has happened other times, right? I mean, liquor establishments have sued the city before.
Absolutely. There's a lot of appeals pending, actually, and that's what makes this so unsettling, because not only could the board go forward and be much less community friendly, but they could actually go backward and undo a lot of the things that the ward board did by settling a lot of these cases.
We contacted the new chairman of the Baltimore Liquor Board, Benjamin Neal, and asked him to join the show today to explain his decision there. He declined and said, quote, "I have a law office to run." So he didn't make himself available to this. He recommended instead that we speak with Michelle Bailey Hedgepeth, the executive secretary at the Liquor Board, but Ms. Bailey Hedgepeth told us she could not discuss any specific cases. So we don't have much there. But it does raise questions about, you know, how are things supposed to be done, and are things going to be done differently now that Governor Hogan has appointed two and soon three members of the Baltimore City Liquor Board? If you've been involved in these cases in Baltimore City, I know folks out there, our listeners are among the very active and civic-minded people who probably belong to neighborhood associations that have done battle with liquor establishments in Baltimore City. You can call in and share your reflections and comments of the last couple of years, and if you have any concerns about what's happened here. And I have more questions for Rebecca Lundberg-Witt, Becky Witt, staff attorney with the Community Law Center, who writes the Booze News blog on the center's webpage, and just got some praise for this, too, I think, in Baltimore Magazine. Didn't I read that?
Oh, did we?
I think they said something nice about you
great.
In that magazine. Yeah,
I should look it up.
Yep. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. What do you think the role of the liquor board should be in Baltimore City? Do you think 180-day suspension is too tough for the violations cited there at the stadium lounge? Our email address, midday@wypr.org. You can also tweet comments or questions to midday@wypr. Hey, welcome back to Midday, our first hour today with Rebecca Lundberg-Witt, Becky Witt, staff attorney at the Community Law Center, who writes the Booze News blog. She goes to each and every Baltimore City Liquor Board hearing and observes and writes, takes notes, and then writes a blog post about it. I was remarking before the show that, you know, the Baltimore Sun, the Evening Sun, the Morning Sun, on a regular basis, would cover the liquor board every meeting. Now, we get to some of them. I don't think we get to all of them. The Baltimore Brew does its part. Fern Shen and staff, her extensive staff over there, they keep an eye on the city liquor board. But you seem to be the main watchdog now.
It seems like it.
Do you see any other reporters there at each?
I think Fern is the person I see the most from the Brew. And then occasionally when some fancy restaurant opens up in Harbor East or wherever, then the Baltimore Business Journal might show up.
Maybe the Daily Record?
I don't think I've seen the Daily Record
there. You have to catch wind of something brewing at the liquor board that's worth attending to hear. Now, I used to cover City Hall years ago, and the liquor board, it was always fun to cover it because community groups would come in, lots of people from Fells Point especially, to come in to complain about bars, about, you know, noise and urination and trash and the serving of minors. That was a different matter that was usually presented by an inspector. Mm-hmm. So what do you see these days? When complaints come to a liquor board, when they actually have to have a hearing, who's been the provocateur of that? Who pushes the board to have a hearing?
Well, I mean, sometimes community association people and just community members have to call many times over the same complaint. So that's one thing that was in the audit about the lack of record keeping. So sometimes there would be a violation that an inspector would notice and they'd write it on their form, but they wouldn't file it, or they wouldn't give it to the right person, or they would give it to the right person, but that person would misplace it either maybe on purpose, maybe by accident. So violations were not getting through to the right people. And so sometimes, I mean, I talked with some police officers from the Baltimore City Police lately, and they say that sometimes they would still walk over their police reports and hand them to the person at the liquor board that they would trust to actually pass it on. Hmm. So sometimes complaints would evaporate. Sometimes they would get misplaced. I don't think there's ever been a single time when I've opened a file and not found something misfiled in that file. So,
boy, the legislative audit was really harsh.
It was.
Wasn't it? I mean, you said basically there were hardly any inspections being done.
Yeah.
And really poor record keeping.
Extremely poor. Yeah. Some of the inspectors even kept their inspector's reports in the trunks of their car. It was a mess. And it's improved, but it's still, there's a lot of room for improvement still.
Now, when Tom Ward became chairman, things changed there for a while. The Sun reported that during the 2014 fiscal year, the Liquor Board found more than 240 violations at Baltimore bars, more than double the number found in the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
The board also closed or revoked 28 licenses compared to just 8 the year before. Is that right?
I'm surprised by the 28 because I don't think that I never saw the ward board revoke any licenses. I think maybe what they're referring to is
suspensions,
enforcing maybe suspensions, or there's this part of the law that says if you don't use your license for 180 days, it expires.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Maybe that's what they're referring to.
So they cleaned up some of that too.
Mm-hmm.
right
because the previous board wasn't at all enforcing that part of the law,
so you'd have a dormant license.
Yeah.
Right. 410-662-8780 is the phone number here. If you live in Waverly and you've been observing what happened here with the Stadium Lounge, you want to give us a ring? I mean, this is hyper-local talk today, but the liquor boards are throughout the state in each county appointed by the governor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to talk about, you know, how they go about their duties. Did that legislative audit look at any other liquor board besides Baltimore's, or was just focused on Baltimore's?
No, it was just Baltimore City. So we Community Law Center and some of our state legislators and some community activists specifically, we had been wondering, and I'm using the we, I wasn't around at this point, but the community had been wondering basically what was going on at the liquor board. Things were disappearing, things were not organized properly, and it just didn't seem like things were adding up. And so we got the law changed to require the legislative audit every 3 years, and it only applies to Baltimore City because that's the board that really has the issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a call here. Lafayette in Baltimore. Welcome to the Midday Show. Hi.
Hi.
Go right ahead, Lafayette. You're on the air.
Yes. I have a question about, it's my understanding that you had what they call a cut rate, and then you had a bar. And a bar was supposed to provide, besides being able to sell liquor, a bar is supposed to provide a place for you to sit and a restroom if necessary, and they could operate 7 days a week. And a cut rate could operate only, we would have to be closed on Sunday, 6 days a week, and close at 10 o'clock. And in East Baltimore, we have several bars that stay open 7 days a week. You can't sit in them. They don't provide any rest facilities or anything like that. But they've been operating for years as cut rates, or like a cut rate. And I wonder, is that legal?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you called in, Lafayette, because I was going to ask Becky Witt about this today. We've discussed this before with Deborah Furholden from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, who's done a lot of work on research on Baltimore liquor establishments. And these places that were once upon a time, they were corner taverns,
mm-hmm.
when Baltimore had like 900,000 people, right? And
yeah.
Over the years,
yeah.
they've sort of morphed into what Lafayette's talking about.
Yeah,
cut
exactly.
rate, really a package store with mm-hmm. a couple of stools mm-hmm. To make it look like there's a bar still in there. But
right.
the stools are never used. Nobody ever goes in and sits down.
Right, yeah. So this is a really a big problem. So those places that you're talking about have tavern licenses. So they're supposed to be selling to people who are seated for drinks on sale. And then they can also sell, they're supposed to sell over the bar packaged goods as well. But there's all these places that don't operate that way. It's way cheaper for a business to just operate the packaged goods side because then they don't have to staff the bar side.
And they have much longer hours under the law. Right.
And you can sell on Sundays, which is a big competitive advantage. So they have and you have an extra hour. You can stay open until 2 instead of 1 for the liquor store license. It's illegal, Lafayette. Call the liquor board and complain.
Now, this is a controversial area because the city, in going through its overhaul of zoning, new zoning regulations, has been asked by the mayor and the city council members, some are in support of just basically eliminating some of these places because they shouldn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Under agreement that was worked out some years ago, back in the 70s,
right.
there was an understanding that they would just sort of grandfather away, but they haven't.
Right. I think the idea was that they were hoping that they would transition into being actual taverns, and it just hasn't happened. So they're still nonconforming. If that zoning code ever passes,
right.
then there might be some change.
Right. There might be fewer of them, right?
Yeah.
Because the
mm-hmm.
argument is that per capita we have too many
yeah.
liquor establishments mm-hmm. in the city.
Right.
410-662-8780. And this came up after the April 27th riot when some of the liquor stores were damaged. One was burned. I wrote a couple of columns about a man who was attacked and his corner package goods liquor store was used to be called a lounge once upon a time, but it was one of these places.
Mm-hmm.
He was burned out. And the mayor, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, is reluctant to provide aid,
right.
Financial aid for those places to be reestablished at a time when the city is trying to eliminate some of them.
Right.
And that gets me to the Rules Committee. All right.
Yes.
There's a new Rules Committee for the Liquor Board.
Mm-hmm.
One of its members is David Kim,
mm-hmm.
who is the president of the Korean American retailers, grocers and
organization.
Yes, I forget the full title of it. I'm sorry, KGRO. Anyway, now he has complained about the mayor's mm-hmm. attitude on the mayor's position on these non-complying liquor establishments
mm-hmm.
and the zoning. But he sits on. He's been now appointed to a rules committee
mm-hmm.
along with several other people who have represented bar rooms before.
Mm-hmm.
To revise the rules of the liquor board.
Mm-hmm.
Could you go over this for us?
Sure.
These appointments, by the way, were made by Ben Neal, the new chairman of the board, correct?
Yes. Okay. As far as I know, yes. That's what the press release said. So with the new board, actually, in 2014, we worked with our legislators again to pass a law that says that the liquor board has to update its rules and regulations by October 31st of this year. So that law was passed in early 2014. So they've had almost 2 years to get it done. And so now they're getting started.
Okay.
And so the way that they decided to update their rules, which were last updated in 1998, is to appoint this committee. And the committee is heavily, heavily weighted towards licensees, attorneys, and licensees. So 7 out of the either 12 or 14 members, it's hard to tell exactly how many there are, 7 of those people are either licensees, attorneys, or licensees. And there's a few other community people. Some of the people that they say are community members actually represent licensees as consultants in hearings, so they're more on the licensee side than the community side. They just had their first meeting yesterday.
You're not a member of this committee.
I'm not. There's no community attorneys on the committee.
Okay. Did you ask to be on the committee?
Yes.
Oh, so and you weren't invited to
participate. I wasn't invited, but I still went.
So is it, I wish, you know, Mr. Neal wouldn't come on the show today because he said he was too busy, but there's 12 or 14. You're not sure which the number is?
The list that they gave to the public was 12, but then 2 additional people showed up to the meeting yesterday, and Michelle Bailey-Hedgepeth, who's the head of the agency, said that they were always supposed to be on the list. So I guess maybe there's 14.
Okay. And when you look at the list and you look at the names of the some of them are attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
They had all represented liquor interests in the past.
Yes. So all the attorneys very regularly represent licensees, yeah. And then there's a few licensees as well.
Before we go to the next call, I want to just go back to the subject of these package stores that used to be taverns that mm-hmm. the city wants to eliminate some of these. And there's several. There's like 75 or 80 that they think are, non-compliant, right?
Non-conforming.
Non-conforming.
Yeah.
Thank mm-hmm. you. When you go to the liquor board, Becky Witt, and you sit there and you look at the different cases that come in, how many of them relate to that issue of, this is not a bar room anymore, but it's people hanging outside,
yeah.
Groups hang outside this packaged goods store, and there's problems associated with that.
Yeah.
And there's too many of them, like there's four in one neighborhood.
Right. Well, sometimes there's four on one block in Park Heights. I mean, it's crazy. So very rarely is the issue related to the package or to the taverns that have just the packaged goods side. For a while under Judge Ward, there were part-time inspectors that were going out and trying to get into they all have a tavern side of the building. They just usually don't keep it open, which is illegal. So what the inspectors were doing under Judge Ward is going out and trying to get into the tavern side and asking to be let in. And oftentimes they were told no. And so there were maybe, I'm just guessing here, maybe three or four violations like that under Ward.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure I won't see any more of those.
Okay. You won't see with the new board.
Going forward,
oh,
no.
So going forward, you don't expect much enforcement. Is that it?
No.
Generally?
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Let's go back to the phone lines. John in Baltimore. Go right ahead, John. Welcome.
Yes. I don't know if firsthand, but I heard that Judge Ward had required the inspectors who were not going out at night when a lot of the clubs were active, were just going out during the day when, of course, there was no activity whatsoever to inspect. And he required them to go out at night and actually inspect these clubs when they were active.
Yeah, we went over that a little bit earlier in the hour, John.
I must have missed that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize.
So did you have a follow-up question on that?
No whatsoever. That was my understanding. I understood that he was very unpopular with the inspectors for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just sort of made sense to have inspectors go out. Now, as far as we know, are inspectors still being required to go out in the evening?
I don't know. That'll be something interesting. It was interesting under the Ward Board how many more violations they were hearing during their hearings. It was like at least double or triple what the Fogelman Board was doing. So it was interesting.
Fogelman, that's a reference to the chairman before
yes.
Tom Ward, right?
Yes.
Mark, right here in Oakenshaw in Baltimore. We'll put you right on the air, Mark. Go right ahead. Hi.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Becky. Thanks for doing this show, because this is a very important topic in our little corner of Baltimore.
Oh, so you're not far from Waverly and the Stadium Lounge.
So I live about three blocks in the Stadium Lounge. The Oakenshaw is the neighborhood on the west side of Greenmount. So we are the counterparts to Waverly and Better Waverly. So I was involved testifying when the Stadium Lounge received its suspension and in the petition to try and cause them to lose their license a few years ago. And because I live two or three blocks away, I could sort of do this without sort of fear of retaliation or social pressure or what have you.
So what do you want to say about this decision?
Well, it's a real blow to the neighborhood. I mean, you got to understand, they were shut down for the gambling. That's just their latest problem. But the community's concern is every morning at 6:30 in the morning, these guys start selling carry out booze. And guys stagger around our alleys drinking these airplane bottles, little 1.5 ounce things of whiskey or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And we just get this barrage of these guys staggering around the alleys. Of course, there's no toilet in the alley, so they're using the toilet and throwing trash everywhere. And it's just a disaster. This is the kind of thing where we've got to decide what Baltimore City, what kind of city we're going to have. Is this what we're going to do, is have guys staggering around the alley drunk all day? Or is this a place where people are going to have families and, businesses on the corner can thrive?
Thank you for the call, Mark. See, there's an example of what we were talking about, right? So the Stadium Lounge, once upon a time, was a bar. Mm-hmm. That's all it was, right?
Yeah.
And over the years, it morphed into one of these places where you could also sit down and have a drink, but they also sold over-the-counter.
Right.
From 6 a.m. until 2 a.m.?
Yep, those are the hours, 6 to 2.
So there's only 4 hours where it has to be closed and not selling what Mark called the airplane bottles, minis, right?
Yep.
Right. He's right about that. And I was, in preparation for the show we did with Deborah Furholden from Hopkins about these establishments, I was just driving around the city and really observing liquor stores and how many of them there are, not just how many, but how condensed they are in certain neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Sometimes I was amazed at one stretch in Govan's, maybe four, in a very short drive, maybe three or four blocks. And then in some places, they take up two or three corners of an intersection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it makes it really difficult for other businesses to want to come in once you have a block with a bunch of liquor stores because of the patrons. And a lot of times these liquor stores, they're really... they're selling alcohol in containers that are meant to be consumed immediately. So people go outside and immediately drink their beer. So they sell individual beers, those little bottles that Mark was talking about. And so these stores really are catering to a clientele of people who are drinking out on the street to excess. And it's a terrible problem.
Becky Witt is with us. She is the watchdog of the liquor board. She's a staff attorney at the Community Law Center. She's going to stay with me for the rest of the hour if you want to talk about this. We have open phone lines the rest of the way here, okay? So it's 410-662-8780. You can comment on what you've heard so far that Becky and I have discussed. Also talk about anything else that's been in the news the last couple of days that's on your mind you want to share with us. I have some emails to read regarding the closing of the city jail. The decision by the state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, to pull out of the Homicide Review Commission, the fledgling Homicide Review Commission here in Baltimore City. We also have some emails from people talking about crime in the city and what to do about it. So if you want to weigh in on any of those topics in the next 10, 12 minutes of this first hour of the Midday Show, please give us a ring now during this break. 410-662-8780. You don't have an airplane bottle on you, do you? I'm kidding. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. I've never heard it called that before. Have you ever heard it called that before?
No.
Always call them minis.
Minis, yeah.
Right? Here's an email from Marie who says, having faced four different liquor boards as a resident and a community advocate, I have been baffled over the years by the board's refusal to put the rights of many property owners on even the same plane as the privilege of a liquor license. It is called a privilege in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Why are residents' property rights being trumped by this privilege? Well, I don't know the answer to that. I used to observe the liquor board. People who have liquor licenses are very valuable to a business, and they hire attorneys, and those attorneys get to be very good at arguing before the liquor board. Mm-hmm. What would you say about it?
One of the things that's been pretty alarming about the new board is that the new chairman gave an interview to the Baltimore Business Journal in which he said that he's not going to revoke any licenses because a license is a property, basically property right, and that's the opposite of what the law says. The law specifically says a liquor license is not property.
Wow. Did Ben Neal say that?
He did. Yeah, he said that to the Baltimore Business Journal, which is, it's just sad because the previous chairman always said a liquor license is a privilege, not a right. And so we're kind of flipping that around.
Is the word privilege used in the law?
It is, yeah.
Okay. So it goes back to a question I had before. If they decide to revoke a license or not renew a license, what happens to it? It's no longer property.
Yeah.
Couldn't the liquor board order that it be sold to somebody or put it up for auction?
Well, that's what I think the chairman said he would do instead of revoking a license. I don't see the authority for that in the law. I guess it's possible that they could do that, and I think that the previous boards have done that. I think the Fogelman board did that, but I don't really think that there's authority for it in the statute.
Mr. Neal said this. He was appointed in June. Mm-hmm. And he made this announcement in the Baltimore Business Journal.
In July.
Right after that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That bears further watching, as editorial writers like to say. An email from Diana who says, according to occupancy statistics from 2003 to 2013, the capacity of the bars in Federal Hill has grown by roughly 40%. So even though there is a restriction on new licenses coming into the area because of the bar density, the liquor board has allowed many bars to expand. That means a growth from roughly 3,500 bar stools to about 5,000 without any comparable increase in parking or other infrastructure. It also means that this neighborhood, Federal Hill, with its narrow streets and lack of parking, now houses three or four of the biggest bars in the city. Residents have struggled with noise, nuisances like bar patrons urinating and defecating on sidewalks and stoops, as well as patrons destroying property and having fights. This is why the liquor board is so important. At a time when the mayor wants to recruit 10,000 more families for the city, allowing too many bars, bars that are too big, and bars that are out of control does not help the safety and health of our community. Another one here to read, but let me take a couple of calls before I go to that one. Mike in Waverly. Go right ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I live just up the street from the Stadium Lounge, and I've lived here since 1974, and I've seen its transition from a kind of bar that you'd see at the end of the day, you know, a lot of pickup trucks there with ladders on top where working guys would come to, you know, have a beer at the end of the day.
Right.
And I'm sure you remember places like that from wherever you grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And to a place that's become basically a packaged goods store. I know it, you know, I look at it as kind of a neighborhood nuisance. I know, thanks to Aaron Hankin and The Signal that did a radio thing on the 3300 block of Greenmount Avenue, that there's a lot of people who find the tavern part, you know, a source of neighborhood and community and meaning. And I think that's okay, but it's primarily that packaged good thing has created traffic and loitering, and it all connects to that program that you had with the person from Hopkins.
Yeah, Deborah Furholden. And you know, the governor of Maryland actually was very dismissive and actually was critical of the mayor for taking this position on some of those nonconforming places that, albeit they were damaged in the riot, should the city be trying to help restore, or should the state or the city trying to help restore businesses that they're trying to put out of business under the new zoning regulations? I mean, that's the mayor's position. The governor seemed very dismissive of it. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Becky.
Yeah, I guess I don't really have that much of a comment except that, yeah, a lot of community activists have been working in that area where the unrest happened for a long time against the liquor stores. And so they feel like there's a limited amount of money to rebuild. These businesses are not benefiting our community, so let's give it to the businesses that are.
Yeah. Cheryl wrote in, she says, at the local national night out event last night, the night out against crime last night, many people in attendance were upset and frustrated about the change in the situation with the Stadium Lounge and fear that this change in board membership means that the quality of life of all city dwellers will be negatively affected as bars are favored over residents again. She also mentions here that she lives in Homeland, and we and members of other surrounding neighborhoods suffered for years because of the unruly behavior of patrons of Craig's or Favorites. There was a lot of destruction of property, sex in people's vehicles, noise at 2 to 3 in the morning, all kinds of other craziness. It was really affecting the quality of life of a lot of communities in the area. You mentioned Craig's earlier in the show. What was the story there?
Yeah, I actually represented the community in that case. So I represented the York Road Partnership, and we filed a protest of renewal in March to protest the renewal of that license. And under the ward administration, that license was not renewed. So that license
So they closed it down, mm-hmm. Judge Ward,
yeah.
When he was chairman of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Jason in Severn in Anne Arundel County. Hi, thanks for calling in, Jason.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I live in Severn now, but for many years I lived in the city, and I lived in a rehab house and the house was rehabilitated, not me, in West Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I lived right next to a liquor store. Literally, they were my next door neighbor. And I had a fantastic experience. The people were kind. We cleaned the sidewalk together. And you know, their entire family worked there, and that was their livelihood. And perhaps it wasn't as nice as a neighborhood, and perhaps they weren't selling $79 bottles of un-oak Chardonnay or whatever. I mean, but they participated in making the place a little bit better, just like I did, one tiny house at a time. And I think taking away their livelihood and not considering each individual case and each place, you know, I think that's wrong, just to blatantly say, okay, we have it enough. There's too many.
Well, what do you do when there's too many? Let me ask you about that then, because you're referencing this issue in Baltimore City with nonconforming, what do we call them, liquor establishments that have a basically function as liquor stores, even though they started out in life as a bar room and had extended hours, 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. So that presents a problem in some communities that, you know, people are able to buy liquor. And these places supposedly were supposed to go out of business, Jason, starting in the 1970s, but it didn't happen. So what do you do if you have, you know, 625,000 people today and the same number of liquor establishments you had when the city had 900,000?
Well, you know, I agree that there's an issue to be looked at. I mean, there is something. I mean, I go to Alonzo's on Cold Spring Lane, and that place sells liquor as a liquor store, but it's still a functioning restaurant and bar room. Mm-hmm. And I see many professors and people from the academia and academic establishment in that area there, and all the people live harmoniously in that neighborhood. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, what they're doing differently than some of the other neighborhoods.
They're not doing anything differently, actually. Well, they are actually serving people at a bar, and they actually have food. That's quite different than some of the places in West Baltimore, East Baltimore we're talking about. And the density, you don't have the density there that you do. You don't see, you know, another place right across the street that's a liquor store. So that.
Well, I see what you mean, and I you know, recognize the difference. The place next to me was not, you couldn't go in and sit down and have a beer. But I would have the same camaraderie with them, with the people that worked in the establishment, as well as my neighbors that were just there to pick up a bottle of wine or grab a six-pack of beer.
Hey, Jason, we're not saying that all these places are bad. We're not saying, I like bar rooms myself. I'm with you on that, and it is possible to run a great bar room and saloon. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any question about that. The problems in Baltimore, though, are complex. So on one level, you have just community organizations that complain, mm-hmm. neighbors who complain about behavior associated with a place, and then you have the density problem.
Right, and I totally agree with Jason that there are a lot of really great, responsible liquor store and bar owners, and we should be encouraging those people to open businesses in Baltimore. But the liquor board has been so lax in its regulation that it's made everyone kind of complacent, and they don't really have to build good relationships with their neighbors if they don't want to, and they don't have to sweep out in front if they don't want to, because they know they're not going to be inspected, and if they are inspected, they know nothing's going to happen. So we really need a good system of regulation to make sure everyone's a good neighbor.
Well, I'm glad you're there keeping an eye on things, Rebecca Lundberg-Witt. Becky Witt, I'll just call you that from now on. Is that all right?
Yes.
I love your name, but Becky is great. Becky Lundberg-Witt, Rebecca Lundberg-Witt. Becky Witt is a staff attorney with the Community Law Center, and she writes the Booze News blog, and I think we posted it on my Facebook page, the Dan Rodrigues Facebook page, if you want to get a look at Becky's writing, her reporting on the liquor board. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That's our first hour. We've got another hour of midday ahead, so please stay tuned. We're going to take a break here for lunch, and Becky will have some lunch from Terra Cafe, located at 101 East 25th Street, 25th at St. Paul. Terra Cafe serves specialty wraps, fried fish, shrimp and grits, chicken and waffles, flame-grilled burgers, paninis, and more. More information on the web, or they have a nice Facebook page, Terra Cafe, Be More. Thank you very much for providing lunch for our guests. So please stay tuned for the news. We'll see you on the other side.